John Whitworth sat at his desk, his head turning to peer through the glass double doors that also served as his only window to look out over the portion of Puget Sound. Mount Rainier was visible far in the distance, with the sun beginning to arc over its crest. It was close to noon on Bainbridge Island. Whitworth reflected on his family's history as he sat gazing through the double doors. He was the great-great-grandson of Lord John Whitworth, the man who'd invented the standard ruling, the dimensions of all screws manufactured from the early 1800s onward. The money, land, and even lineage from those early days were long gone. Whitworth had not failed in life. He retired from the U.S. Marine Corps as a brigadier general, although he had only been given the rank as a retirement send-off gift and never really served holding the rank at all. Retirement pay was not that significant when it came to supporting he and his wife, the repaying of educational loans for his children, as well as the real costs of owning a home on Wing Point, stretching out from one side of the exclusive island. He needed a job. He found a job, but the skipper of the fishing boat was a tough man to satisfy. He wanted to know John's military background. Whitworth knew that if he gave the gruff, seemingly mean-spirited man his real rank, he'd never get the job. And there simply weren't any jobs around that compared in wages or bonus income. Whitworth sighed, looking at the employment form ship's captain had given him earlier in the week. His eyes focused on the lagoon that looked out and took up about a fourth of his waterfront lot. Earlier in the year, he had built piers out about 10 yards from both sides. The couple that lived in a home on the far side of the lagoon had triplets. Whitworth purchased a paddle boat when he finished the piers so the triplets could paddle over to his place whenever they felt like visiting. The unidentical triplets were 3 children, 6 years of age, 2 boys and a girl. They named the paddle boat Bubbles. So Whitworth dutifully painted that name on both sides of the twin pontoons. Some days the trips would vigorously paddle over to his pier, be greeted by Harvey, his dog-like cat, and Tank, the large seagull, who always perched on one of the high poles at the end of the pier. He kept a supply of those popsicles, the ones with the funny idiotic jokes printed onto the sticks, in his freezer, as the trip's parents would never let them have anything like that at home. It was just past midday, yet Whitworth noted that the lagoon had become faintly aromatic. He looked over the far shore, and his suspicion was confirmed. The far shore abutted the sound itself. Normally there was a narrow inlet of water that ran between the lagoon and the waters of Puget Sound. The constantly working tides usually kept the small stream open and running. That tidal movement of water allowed the lagoon to refresh twice a day. Whitworth noted with a frown that the stream normally cutting through the piles of small stones was no more. A high tide from days before had moved the small golf ball-sized stones around just enough to close the gap. Whitworth frowned. Something would have to be done. So he changed into his work jeans, threw on his boots and logging shirt, and went to the back door, selected a pointed shovel, and then made his way down to the shore along through the bracken, following a well-worn path. Harvey and he took at least twice a day. He traced the course of the old outlet and began to dig. Harvey found a large flat rock nearby to spread his body across and absorb what he could from the rays of the afternoon sun. The work was hard. The stones didn't take to shoveling well. It took a full hour to dig halfway from the lagoon to the sound. Whitworth rested against one wall of his 4-foot-deep trench to pause and reflect. He looked up to see a line of miniature people approaching from the south. It was the triplets. They were walking in a single file over the rocks, each with a small shovel over one shoulder. He waited with a smile until they arrived. "Hey, you guys," he said, and waved with a big smile. One of the boys, Mark, was very expressive and yelled back as they approached, "We've come to help you!" Whitworth laughed aloud at that. The other boy, Tom, just smiled his usual little smile, while Anka, the young girl and leader of the triplets, held up an arm. The three stopped midway down the newly dug part of the trench. "We'll begin to work here," she stated imperiously, with no smile or wave. Whitworth nodded at the industriousness of the kids and set back to work on his own. He threw rocks for another 15 minutes before he had to rest. He leaned on the shovel and looked back. Anka was sitting on one edge of the trench watching her two brothers. Mark and Tom had quickly given up the work of digging to drag a pile of driftwood to the edge of the divide and were carefully assembling some of the edifice right in the center of the trench. Whitworth shook his head and walked back to where the triplets were assembled. "What are you two doing?" he asked the two boys in exasperation. The boys stopped their work to look up to him, then bent back down without answering to continue their efforts. "They're building a fish trap," Anka said from her position nearby. The boys continued their work. Whitworth looked down at them in exasperation. "You can't build a fish trap out of wood," Whitworth said to Anka, throwing his hands into the air. "The wood will just float away when the water comes through." Anka looked at him without answering. "You can't catch fish in such a contraption," Whitworth tried again. Anka leaned forward, walked over to him, and grabbed him by the hand. She led him back to the part of the trench Whitworth had been digging when he noticed the boys building their fish trap. After a moment, she released his hand and gestured for Whitworth to lean down. "The fish doesn't have to be real," she whispered in his ear. Whitworth stood up and stared down at the girl's wide eyes. He stared for a full minute before he understood. Anka turned and went back down the depression to help her brothers with the fish trap. An hour later, Whitworth stood at the small patio just outside the second floor, double glass doors of his office. He went back inside, sat down, and wrote on the boat captain's employment form that he had been a sergeant major in the Marine Corps, now retired. Sergeant majors had a star, too, inset into the center of their many chevron shoulder patches. "The fish doesn't have to be real," he said aloud as he addressed and stamped the envelope.